we're discussing the malach of tzoveya, dying, which is very relevant to Yikrim. D-Y-E-I-N-G. There's a concept called tzviya derech lichluch, which means the following. I dye something, but it's more or less dirtying the thing instead of dyeing it. Okay? Example, you have a nosebleed, and you take a white handkerchief and gather up the blood. So you are dyeing the handkerchief red, but that is not dyeing, that's dirtying. Okay? Okay. People don't usually dye handkerchiefs with red blood, right? And that's not what the, that's the, okay? Or you're eating cherries, and you have cherry juice all over your hands, and you wipe them on a towel. So now the towel is red, right? Or you're eating pistachio nuts. Used to have those with red thing on them. Your hands are all red. You wipe it into a towel, right? So there's a machlokas rishonim whether that's called soveya altogether. One possible thing is that since it is not a concept of dyeing at all, it's a concept of dirtying, so that's not even the concept of dyeing, and therefore it's not even prohibited rabbinically. It's bechlal not in the parsha of dyeing. It's more like staining, right? Right. Except staining also has a positive connotation. You stain wood or whatever, right? So we'll call it dirtying. Okay. On the other hand, there's another way of looking at it, and that is that true, it's destructive, but it's dying something in a destructive way. When you do a malacha that's destructive, so it's prohibited rabbinically. Okay, but if it's not dying altogether, it's not the concept bichlal of coloring something, doing it in a way that's dirty, then there's no rabbinic prohibition either, because it's not in that parasha. That's the machlokas rishon. Halachically, the halacha is lechatchila we're choshesh for the shita that holds that tzviya derech lichluch is awesome, at least rabbinically. But it's only awesome rabbinically. And therefore, if you have cherry juice on your hands, you should not wipe it on a towel. Surely not on a red towel, because there it's not even that destructive. Just the opposite. It makes the color, enhances the color. Nor should you use a red handkerchief to take care of a nosebleed. That is worse than anything. But even a white handkerchief where it gets dirty, right, lechatchila you shouldn't use. So what should you do? So in the case where you can wash off the thing, wash off your hands from the juice, and don't rub it on any kind of cloth. If you don't, you can't wash it off, right? You can't go and wash your nose from the blood, so you have to do something with a nosebleed. So the halacha is like this, that paper, after it's commercially made, isn't dyed. It's not worth dyeing, and the process would destroy it. So the whole concept of dyeing, coloring by paper, doesn't exist. Therefore, coupled with the fact that it's dirtying it, anyway, there's no prohibition at all. So you're allowed to use paper towels, tissues, anything that normally would not be dyed, colored, right, or isn't worth coloring, right, but mostly paper falls into this thing.
Like pink tissues.
Even pink ones, okay, because the whole concept of coloring doesn't apply to it, okay, because you don't, people don't dye, like, no, they dye them in when they're made. But after they're made, there's no way of dyeing it now. Okay, so the whole concept of commercially made paper products aren't dyed. They're dyed before, while they're being made, but not after they're made. It's not worth dyeing them afterwards, and it wouldn't hold up or whatever. So therefore, if you have to wipe your hands, if they're colored, you want to use something for a nosebleed or a cut or something, so you can use gauze, cotton, what's it called, all those things. Nobody dyes ready-made cotton balls after they're made. There may be colored cotton balls to begin with, but not after they're made. Same thing goes with tissues, paper towels. Bidyevet, if you don't have anything like that available, all you have is a handkerchief. It's a white handkerchief, then you can rely on the opinion that since it's dirtying it, it's not tzviya. And if you need to take care of a nosebleed and you have no paper available, you can use a cloth handkerchief. Okay. But lechatchila, you should avoid coming to that problem if you can. if you can't, or in situations where it's absolutely necessary to color something for the sake of dirtying it, okay? Because we learned before, you can't wet things with water cloth because that's cleaning it. So if you, but it's on the other hand, if it's dirt, if it's colored water, then that's dirtying it. That's not cleaning. The only problem would be coloring. And here you're coloring it basically not for the sake of the color, but just to, that you can put some wet. For instance, give you an example where this would be okay lechatchila because it's a big need and it can't be done with paper. Let's say you have a fire that caught on your white Shabbos tablecloth. You don't want it to spread. So, and it's no danger to life, so you can't put out the fire. So what you can do is pour a liquid, not gasoline, right, water, on the rest of the tablecloth, so when the fire hits that part, it'll go out. That's mutter. But you can't pour water on a white tablecloth because that's called cleaning, right? Shriyaso hikibuso, like we learned when we learned the laws of cleaning. So what you can do is take some colored liquid, like red wine, or if you don't have any wine, you can take water, mix it with a color from food coloring, not food coloring, but like mix coffee into the water. So now it's a brown liquid. It's not going to clean the tablecloth, but it's going to color the tablecloth. But that coloring is dirty. And pour the coffee on the tablecloth in order that when the fire hits that point, it'll go out. That's mutter. There you can say, we'll use paper. You can't use paper. The tablecloth is cloth. Right? Go pour water on your paper towel. It's not going to stop the fire on your tablecloth, right? Or other situations. Make a compress, and you don't have paper, or paper's not good enough. So there you can pour colored liquids to make a compress, or you want to, a baby is dehydrating, and you have to, wet something and make it that the air then becomes saturated with the liquid. So you put these things around the baby's head or whatever to make him less dry, okay, more humid. So that also you're allowed to do, not with clear water, because that's cleaning, if it's cloth, but with dirty water here, since it's a tzorich gadol, right, it's a sake of refuah, even if it's not pikuach nefesh, you can rely on the more lenient opinion that dirtying is not called dying at all, not prohibited at all. But the chatchila, you should be choshesh not to dirty, color something, even in a way that's dirtying. Better use paper or wash your hands or wash the thing off before you use cloth. Yeah.
What if you have a spill of something that's...
Same thing. You have a spill that's colored. Same thing. If you use a cloth... Right. If you use a cloth, it's going to be problematic. If you use a rag that's made out of a begging, it's also a problem. What you can use is a commercially made rag, like one of these, things they have that they sell as rags. Those also are never dyed after they're made. Clothing is dyed, even though you may not dye the clothing now, but clothing is dyed and re-dyed. But things that are made as rags, professional rags, not rags that you made shmatas from original clothing. Right, those kind of things you buy as rags. There also they say that it's mutter, to that we're not choshish for that, for the chumrah of that coloring through dirtying is considered coloring. Here, since it's a thing, it's like paper. It becomes like paper, and it's okay to use that tool. Right. 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 Things that are sold specifically as rags, I've seen that they hold that those are not things that ever died.
And you have to be very careful, though, about not bringing it
out. Yeah, that's a separate malacha. Right, that's a separate malacha. But you can't sop it up to a point where you're going to squeeze it out, for sure. You can't squeeze it out. But you can sop it up enough that it won't be squeezed out automatically. That's okay. Okay. That's that. Okay, just a few words about Elul. The Elul has a few special things about it. Elul is a 30-day period, like before every Yontif, 30 days before the Yontif, you begin to prepare. And 30 days before Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of Elul. And therefore, the month of Elul is preparation for Rosh Hashanah. That's one aspect of Elul, and being preparation for Rosh Hashanah, which happens to be Yom HaDin. So Pesach, the 30 days before, you start preparing cleaning your house. Here you start preparing cleaning yourself, right? So you have to get rid of the spiritual chametz 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. So Elul is a time for preparation for Yom HaDin. That's one aspect of Elul. Second aspect of Elul is that it is the beginning of a 40-day process that ends in atonement on Yom Kippur. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu went up the last 40 days. Three times he was up on Har Sinai 40 days. Three times he was involved with a 40-day period. The first time he surely was up on Har Sinai to get the Torah to begin with. He went up on Vav Sivan or Zion Sivan, came down on Shivas or Batamos and broke the Luchos. Then, according to some, he went up the next day on Shmonos or Batamos and stayed there until before Rosh Chodesh Elul. And then, and that during that time, he convinced the Rabbanu Shel Olam, in what's it called, quotation marks, that he shouldn't destroy the Jewish people. Then he went up again for 40 days, and this is clear that he was up on Har Sinai for the last 40 days, from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur, 40 days. And he, during that time, he davened that the Rabbanu Shel Olam not only shouldn't destroy the Jewish people, but forgive them and bring them back to the level they were before and give them the Torah again. And that he achieved, the forgiveness was given on Yom Kippur, and the second Luchos, the Torah, was re-given on Yom Kippur. So the 40-day process of this atonement started on Rosh Chodesh Elul. So it's not only a preparation for Rosh Hashanah, it's the beginning of a process that ends on Yom Kippur. So Elul has a connection both to Rosh Hashanah and directly to Yom Kippur. The third idea of Elul is it's the end of the year. And the end is a siyum, has special significance insofar that at the end of anything, that's when you take stock of what came before and get to see it in its right perspective. It's like taking inventory. You really know if your business is profitable or not when you take inventory. So until the end of something, you look back and you take all the pluses, the minuses, the losses, the profits, then you can see where you're holding. So the last month of the year is a time for introspection and a review of the whole year. That's another aspect of Elul. Right, whatever. So Elul has in it a lot of points. It's the preparation for Rosh Hashanah, so and it's the beginning of a process of atonement. So it has in it the milas of a beginning. Beginning is special because it sets the foundation for everything that comes after. And it also has the idea of an end. It's the end of the year. So Elul has in it many different concepts that makes it very special. So that's why people in Elul, right, are much more careful about what they do than the rest of the year. And it's not something that's false or whatever, putting on a show or whatever, which maybe next week we'll speak about a little bit more. But it's because Elul has all these important ideas to it, so to make use of them properly, a person has to be extra careful during this month.